You know, the Knights of Columbus have been involved in the cause of life, I guess as long as I have been. I'm dealing with children and unborn children, and they're priceless. Like, there was a young lad, his mother was tucking him into bed. It was a very night, the thunderstorm was going, and the kid was afraid. The little child said to the mother, he said, "Mom, would you sleep in my room tonight? I'm afraid." And the mother tucked him in and she said, it's okay, son, you'll be okay. I have to sleep in Daddy's room." And as she was leaving, putting out the light, she heard this little voice say, "The big sissy." There's another young lad. He came home, the mother asked him, "What'd you learn in religion this morning?" And he said, "Well, I learned about Moses." She said, "What did you learn about Moses?" He said, "Well, Moses was given a special assignment to go behind enemy lines and rescue the Israel people from the Egyptians. And he got him out. And he came to this river. And he said he had to build a platoon bridge to get them across. And he said he got them across. And then he heard that the Egyptians were coming. So he got on his walkie-talkie. And he radioed. And he called for some help of some aircraft help to blow up the bridge, which they did as the Egyptians were crossing the platoon bridge across the Red Sea. And the mother said, "Did they actually tell you that this morning?" And he said, "Well, no," he said, "but if I told you what they told me, you'd never believe it." You know, the unborn, we know a lot more about the unborn children today than they did in many years ago in the ancient world. In the ancient world, there was a very polite family that had a very polite young daughter. And in that same village, there was a very polite family that had a young fella that was very polite. People thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if they grew up in that very polite young woman and married the very polite young fella? So as they grew older, there was a friendship, and lo and behold, they did. They got married. And the whole village rejoiced because the polite young fella married the polite young woman. And everybody was hoping that they would have a child. And it didn't happen. Finally, the news went forth that the polite young woman and the polite young man, that she is pregnant. And so the whole village rejoiced. And they all stopped working, waiting for the birth of the child. And so 9 months were completed, and the child wasn't born. Well, 10 months, the child wasn't born. 12 months, no birth. 2 years, no birth. And they said, "We got to get back to work. We don't know what's going on here." And ended up, they went back to work, and it was never a birth. And eventually, the fella died, the man died, and eventually, the polite young woman also died. And the people in that town that were, remember, the old people, they wanted to know yet what happened in that situation. And so when the old woman died, the polite young woman, the polite young man, they had an autopsy. And they opened up her womb. And you know what they found in her womb? You won't believe this. They found two old men with long white beards, each saying to the other, "After you, after you, after you." Takes time. They're very polite. You know, actually, it was in 1967. I gave a talk in Incarnation Parish. And in 1967, I said to the people, they're trying to change the law here in New York to allow the unborn child to be killed in the womb. And after the mass, the people came up to me and said, "Father, are you okay?" And they said, "There's no way you could change the law to allow the child in the womb to be killed. this is America. What's the matter with you? Now, 20 years later, I gave a talk in our diocese, and I said that we have to change the law to protect all the children in the womb. And after the Mass, the people came up to me and said, Father, are you okay? There's no way you could change the law to protect all the children in the womb today. This is America. And suddenly it hit me. I understand what John Paul II was speaking about, the Pope, late Pope. We had gone from a culture of life where it was unthinkable, that a child in the womb would be allowed to be killed and that we'd pay for it, to a culture of death where it was unthinkable that we'd change the law to protect all the children in the womb. We come to a culture of death. And how did this happen? And why do we take this for granted? This is America? No, it's not America. They were wrong the first time when they said they will not change the law to allow the child to be killed. Well, they did. And they're wrong the second time also when they said you can't change the law to protect the children in the womb. And they're wrong, we will, and a time will come, and it's happening. But it requires a lot of work. You know, there's a father, Walter Chizek. Father Walter Chizek, he was a Jesuit father that went to Russia to convert Russia. He was arrested as a Vatican spy, and he was sent off into prison, the gulags, where he was for 25 years. And after he survived, no one knows how, he was actually apostolizing in Russia when he suddenly was picked up and brought back to America. Two spies were caught in Englewood, New Jersey, and the Jesuits had been told many years earlier that Father Chizek was dead. They actually had a funeral and buried him up in Orrysville. But suddenly, the Russian government announced that Father Chizek was alive, and they were willing to give Father Chizek for the two Russian spies that were caught in Englewood, New Jersey, and he ended up coming back here. He was in a state of shock. He did not want to come back here. He finally was practicing. But he said to me, you know, in the prison camps, first of all we received in a day was some gruel in the morning, and that was it for the day. And there was no lunch, there was nothing. You go out, you work, and most people died. He said, but whenever some bread and wine was smuggled into the camps, the word would go forth. He was in the camps, and he went there before Vatican II. And he said, in the camps, when that bread and wine would be smuggled in, we'd put it on a trunk of a tree that was cut. And he said, from memory, I would recite the Eucharistic prayer at the cost of my life. And the people in the camps, knowing what was going on, one by one, they came up and received the Eucharist at the cost of their lives. And it was then, if you recall the Eucharistic fast, they were still keeping it. You could not take a drop of water from 12 midnight, the night before you were going to receive the Eucharist the next day. Now, for these people, it meant absolutely nothing for 48 hours and risk in their lives. And they did so. And he said to me, I never offered Mass that was so meaningful at the Passion of Christ that I did in those camps. He said, you know, they shut down the churches in the communist world. In Russia, they shut them all down but one. And he said, and we had to try to survive, but we knew we were under attack. He said, Father, I came back to America and I saw the churches were not locked. They were open. But I went inside and I was in a state of shock because they were empty. And he said, who did this to you? How did this happen? Because when he left America, when I was first ordained 51 years ago, if you didn't arrive early at church, you didn't get a seat. And there were many masses. That's a fact. That's the church that he remembered. And he came back and he saw a church in America where the churches are all open, but there's no one inside. And he said, who did this to you? Who brought you this culture of death? How did you let it happen? And this is a reality that anyone knows who has lived through this whole situation of how did it happen. We are, you know, living in a country where it's practical atheism. That's what it is. In other words, at least the people under the communists knew atheism was being enforced upon them, and they resisted. We had atheism given to us on a plate, and we swallowed it, consumed it. We live with it. It's called secularism, which God is excluded from everything. And God's laws and God's principles are one by one taken out of our laws. You know, the foundation of Western civilization, reality, the foundations was the fundamental belief that our founding fathers had, that life is a gift from God, sacred, absolute, no exceptions, no government, no one can take that from us. And we have allowed the Judeo-Christian principles to be removed from our laws, judgment by judgment, piece by piece, until finally when you are living in the fullness of light, and it starts to become dark, you begin to notice what's happening, and you're waiting, it comes night, and you're waiting for the next dawn. But what happened in our society, the light started to go out, and those who were pro-life many years ago, those who were pro-family, pro-God, they knew the light was going out, and they wanted what's going on. But eventually, as the light goes duller and people are born into that type of atmosphere, they don't even know that what a light is, a bright day, a bright dawn, a God-filled society, a family-centered society. They begin to take it for granted. They begin to take it for granted that this is the normal condition. And others who knew the day where the sun shined, they start to lose hope that it could happen again. Right? And so you have the situation where in a decadent civilization, most people don't know the tragedy that they're living through. There's no way of determining that it's unjust if you lost the sense of justice. What do you measure it against? What do you measure it against? And so we have a society in which so many young people, so many adults even, they've lost a sense of rightness and wrongness. They've lost a sense of the sacredness of life. How did this happen? You know, we all know Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision. And you think that's where life was taken from, or protection for life for the unborn children. No, it was not. It was much more profound than that. Roe v. Wade was the end of Western civilization, my friends. The end. Look at it. Read it. Up to 1973, January 22nd, 1973, this country, Western civilization, was based on the reality that everyone's right to life was absolute with no exceptions. That the quality of people's lives, it differed. Everybody deserved a basic minimum quality of life. They deserve a place to live, they deserve food, housing, and so forth. But the quality of people's lives, it differs. Some can sing, some can play ball, some can not. That's the way it is. But no matter what the quality of your life, your right to life is unconditional, absolute. In Roe v. Wade, my friends, that decision by the judges, if you read through the decision itself, the absolute opposite took place. Namely, the right to life became relative to the quality of your life as determined by others. And so suddenly, even in the womb itself, we had the time of gestation divided into three trimesters. And as your life became more developed, as your life became more meaningful in the eyes of others, then you start to get your right to life. And each time through a development, it was more of a reason needed to kill you until finally you were born. Then supposedly you were not allowed to be killed until the other end of the spectrum. When you saw just yesterday, Dr. Kevorkian died, and notice he didn't ask for his life to be ended. He lived with means, like for others, he didn't take lives. But Dr. Kevorkian was given front page. He wasn't condemned. Notice that. Because that's called euthanasia. It's called where you go from the spectrum of your life, your right to life in the womb or outside the womb is based on the quality of your life as determined by others, to the other end of the spectrum as you start to become, they like to use the term, in the vegetative state. There's no such thing as a vegetative state. You are a human being. You are genetically a human being from the moment of your conception until you die. We shouldn't even use that terminology. You never stop being a person precious to God. But as we start to accept this mentality and this type of thinking, that as your quality of life goes down, it's better for grandma or grandpa not to continue to exist. They're better off dead than to have to suffer. Of course, if you do not believe in the resurrection, if you do not believe in the value of suffering, if you do not believe in the absolute value of every single life, you agree with it. And it's happening. And of course, we now have legalized euthanasia. You do know that. It was upheld by the Supreme Court. Huh? So that the two ends of the spectrum have happened, and of course, God continues to be excluded. So what needs to be done is we have to understand that we have to reinstitute and restore the basic human values. What's the basic human values? That life comes from God, and you cannot kill a child because it has Down syndrome. You do know in America now, 9 out of every 10 Down syndrome children are killed. You see fewer and fewer of them running around. In Europe, it's 95 out of 100. Why? Because we found out the cause of Down syndrome. It's chromosome 21, there's two of them, which causes Down syndrome. Now that we know the cause, Jerome Lejeune, the great professor who found the cause, wanted to get the cure. And into his shock and to his sorrow, he found that his fellow scientists rejoiced with him for finding the cause, because now we can eliminate all the Down syndrome children, which we now do. 9 out of 10 in America are now killed, and 95 out of 100, I said, in Europe are killed. And this mentality of eliminating the imperfect, the ones who should not breed, that is something that is massive. I go all over the world, as you know. I just recently was in Korea. And in Korea, you know, for a nation to survive, you have to replace mom and dad. And since sometimes children die at birth, they say 2.1 is the absolute minimum for a nation to survive. Okay? They asked me to come to Korea. They were at 4.3 reproductive rate, which is healthy. But they asked me to come because the population control people, they go all over the world eliminating the unfit. It's never them. It's the poor. It's those who are handicapped. You know, even in our time now, the great battle is the funding of Planned Parenthood. See, that's the great battle. Well, my friends, let's get something straight. If you or I wanted some program to be funded by the government, you'd have to put in various petitions, and you'd be lucky if you got $1,000. How in the name of God does Planned Parenthood, without asking, receive each year, taxpayers' monies, $400 million of taxpayers' monies without even asking, giving to them by our government? What's going on? Well, they are the greatest destroyers of human life in our country, and I would tell you this, around the world. The world is divided between Maria Stopes International and Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger and Maria Stopes. How does this happen? Well, my friends, I want to say to you this morning, it happens because our government has shot through since 1950s with Planned Parenthood mentality. What do I mean? They are population control people. They implement our aid. Our aid used to be in the Statue of Liberty. Give me your poor, give me your sick, give me the handicapped. We will shelter them, we'll care for them. That's why we were great. We took the people and we helped them, no strings attached. That is long since gone. Gone. Our public policy as a government, is that you only will receive aid from us if you will eliminate your children. So we give you a loaf of bread, but the condition is that you have to take the contraceptives, the abortions, the sterilizations, and everything that comes with it, otherwise you do not get the loaf of bread. Now, in the beginning, that was being pushed outside of government, but now it's mass became the official policy of the United States government. It is the official policy now of even the United Nations. We have bought and sold into it, with people in high places using the government. So I'm saying to you, the government uses as their instrument, because it has the infrastructure all over the world, and I meet them all over the world. I just had a prayer vigil in England, Maria Stopes International. Maria Stopes International is in Vienna, Austria. And say Cape Town, South Africa. I did the prayer vigil. Who was Maria Stopes International? It's either Maria Stopes International or it is Planned Parenthood. But they are funded by the governments in order to implement this unfit being eliminated. They have the infrastructure. And suddenly, you know, this last election, there were a lot of young, new faces came into the government that didn't know about this Planned Parenthood, didn't know about this population control thing, and they're in a state of shock. Why is $400 million being given to Planned Parenthood? And they don't want to fund it. Well, that's a refreshing, that's a breath of fresh air. That is good. That means, but now they're waking up, and I think America is waking up. Wait a second. Why, in the name of God, do we give this? Because there is the mentality that we have to control population and we should not let breed those who should not be labeled to breed, the poor, the unfit. Plus, Henry Kissinger, Memorandum 200, he sold our President Ford with the thing that, you know, for national security, it's good countries that may be a problem to us to limit their people. So we give them only aid if they will not have children. See, another way of saying it is drop dead, but that doesn't go. So you say, we'll give you a loaf of bread, but there's a condition. There's a condition. Now, what's happening around the world, I'll tell you this, I just came back, as I said, from Korea. Koreans realized, God, they were taken. Taken. What do I mean? They were 4.3. They're down to 1.1 replacement level. By year 2050, South Korea will be history. That's why they asked me to come. It's the lowest reproductive rate in the world. Who are they tied with? Lowest reproductive rate in the world for history? I'll tell you who they're tied with. They're tied with Italy, and with Germany, and with France, and with Spain. That's why Western Europe is just dying off the face of the earth. If the Muslims were not having children, Western Europe would be finished. All the children running around in Western Europe, let me tell you that very few are Christians. They're mostly Muslims. And the Muslims have been resisting this whole thing of homosexuality, breaking down a family. They haven't resisted the killing of children and so forth. So while on one hand we may have difficulties, on the other hand, when the Pope at the various world conferences at Cairo and Beijing and so forth, where did his source of strength come from? Who stood with him? Western Europe? North America? Against this culture of death? No way. It was the people in the Muslim world. Let me tell you that. That's a fact. That's a fact. And it was the people in the poor world, the people in South America, Africa. These are the ones that stood with the Pope. Not North America, not Western Europe. Right? And so we have been taken in. We have been taken in. And so I went to Korea, and thanks be to God, marvelous things happened there. And I had the opportunity, it was funny, I knew I had to go there because as soon as they asked me to go, North Korea started to bomb the South. So I obviously God wants me to go there. And they were bombing the island right next to Seoul. So I said, should I fly into Seoul or should I go to Tokyo? Tokyo. So I decided at the last minute I'd go to Seoul, which I did. I was in Busan. It was the southernmost city in Korea. You look across at Japan. And while I was in Busan, Japan was hit with an earthquake, a tsunami, and a meltdown of the atomic power plant. And thanks be to God, I didn't go through Tokyo. I'd still be there, see? But marvelous things did happen. Just a few weeks ago, I came back from Bosnia, from Albania. And I flew into the airport of Mother Teresa, Calcutta. Mother Teresa, Calcutta. Now, there was a woman that was a pro-lifer. But she came from Albania. And I was there with the bishop who was first archbishop put in charge after the communists was falling. And she came back, and the Pope John Paul II came to consecrate him on the grounds where I was. Now, again, I say to you, in the Eastern Bloc countries, there's reason for hope. They are going pro-life. They recognize what the communists did to them, but they're recognizing what fools we are in the West, and they don't want it. They don't want it. As you know, 2 weeks ago, Hungary changed its constitution. And it's a shock to the European Union, but they're not changing it. They changed it and they said, life in Hungary will be protected from conception until death. Life in Hungary, we will only as a government accept a man and a woman for marriage and no other type of relationship. Fact, that's in Hungary, changed. You know, Russia is now, Russia does not allow anyone after 12 weeks to have an abortion unless your husband's going to jail. And not only that, they are actually putting in a bill right now to eliminate that Russia would fund any abortions, the government itself. And they are having a World Congress for Life in Russia this year, and they're inviting all the world leaders, even from America, to this Congress. All through Eastern Europe, it's going pro-God, pro-life, pro-family. And of course, I gave a talk, the opening talk at the Congress for the World Congress in for South America at Aparecida, the great Marian shrine outside of São Paulo, Brazil. And all the bishops and cardinals were there. And they, at the end of their conference, said, we no longer will take aid from America or from any country that is telling us to do away with family, with life, with our children. You can keep it. We'll starve to death. But we're not going to take the aid anymore. We recognize what you're doing to us. You want to eliminate us. We're going to fight you throughout this country, in the halls of Congress. We're going to fight you in the United Nations. We're going to fight. And suddenly, these countries around the world are waking up, which is very refreshing, to know that they're being manipulated and put in out of existence. At the present time, you know prayer is needed for the Philippines. In the Philippines, exactly what's happening in China, they want to start to happen in the Philippines. A bill is being introduced by President Aquino's son, President Aquino, who has died, returning of her grave when she sees what's going on. I was talking to a priest from China, mainland China. This is an interesting fact. How many forced abortions, how many children died in China last 40 years? Do you know? The Holocaust was what? 6 million? Outside, maybe 11 million? Do you know how many children forced abortions in China last 40 years? 400 million. 400 million. Why wasn't that an outcry? How could this possibly be? How could this possibly be? Well, the reality is this, is that that did not happen from within, it came from without. Always from without. Your problem is not always within the family, it's someone coming into the family to change things. So the reality is this, on the other hand, they are all through the Eastern world, Africa is so pro-family, pro-life, that their big thing is to take the initiative now, which they are doing in many countries in Africa, in which they're trying to resist this culture of death coming from the Western world, North America, and Western Europe. And so there's tremendous reasons for hope, because the people who were in darkness are no longer in darkness. And the people who are living in America, every poll is showing overwhelmingly most Americans beginning to realize what has happened to them, and they're resisting it, whether it be to maintain the traditional family of a man and a woman as marriage, whether it be the whole idea of maintaining life itself and not allowing it, not funding it. And the whole concept of, I just tell you this thing. I was on, they asked me to come on live television in Bosnia, in Albania, on the last day I was there. 15 minutes, unedited, right out to the whole country. And I was talking about the abortion, and the guy said, well, it's because, you know, he implied the contraceptives, they use the contraceptives. Now, this was my opportunity. This is live to the whole country, see, unedited. I said, contraceptives. I said, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, there is a disaster. That's a disaster. Because it changed the whole mentality and thinking. I said, you know, sexuality is a God-given gift. It's marvelous. It's a beautiful thing. From it comes little children, comes people who are to praise God forever and to love mom and dad, to love God. And God asks the mom and the dad to cooperate with God and do this. This is a marvelous privilege. It's a sacred thing. It's holy, holy, holy. Okay? I said, what happened? The contraceptives in America and around the world, instead of we've lost the sense of life. Sex is for life and holiness and a child to be forever. So we made it, the purpose of sex is pleasure. And to the exclusion of sex, to the exclusion of life, even to the point that if a woman becomes pregnant, it's like she's got cancer. My God, take it out. Have an abortion. What are you doing? I said, it destroyed us, and it opened up the doors to homosexuality. And because we separate the act of love and life from life itself, we open up the doors to growing of life in the laboratories where there is no human love. There is no God love and mother's love. And so the lives there are manipulated and used and abused. It's destroying us. We've got to step back and look at the whole thing. Maybe the church was right from the beginning. And maybe we have to evaluate and act on the whole truth if we're going to establish a culture of life once again. Where did we go off? Where did we go off? And we went right through the whole, when I came back to the rectory, the archbishop, he comes out on the sidewalk and he said, Monsignor, you did a great job, a great job. It went to the whole country and it's repeated four times. I'd like to simply conclude telling you this. Look, we do prayer vigils around the world. And the prayer vigils are very, very effective if you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. Let me just spend just a few minutes telling you about the spirituality of the helpers is simply this. The greatest evil that took place on the face of the earth, my friends, was the day we crucified our God. No questions. And the greatest good that took place on the face of the earth was the day our God was crucified. He redeemed the world. There is no greater evil in the world today than this culture of death. I go all over the world, my friends, and I can tell you this is a massive, massive evil. Never seen the likes in the history of mankind. Never. Right? Why in the name of God is God permitting this? And if he is permitting it, and he is, he can bring a greater good from it, or he would not be permitting it. Right? And when we try to eliminate this evil by going to the political arena, by education and so forth, it's all well and good, but we still didn't get the means by which God gets a greater good coming from this that would eliminate this evil and God would bless our efforts. And so it is that finally, we communicate to people that in order to overcome this culture of death, you cannot do it, I cannot do it. The only way this culture of death can be overcome is through Jesus Christ. But the risen Christ, he wants to do it, but he can't do it in his risen body. But he can do it through his mystical body, the church. And our job is this. When Jesus came into the world, it was broken. It was sinful. And it wasn't worthy of love, but God loved us unconditionally, everlasting. He created us because he loved us. He died for us because he loved us. And he loves this world, this broken world, this world and this culture of death. He still loves this world. And he wants us to be his instruments of bringing his unconditional, everlasting love to whom? The unborn children? Of course the unborn children. He wants to save them. But the ones who need us more at these places of death, at these abortion centers, at these in this culture of death, is not the unborn children, my friends. They die, their souls go to God. They've done nothing morally wrong in their life. There's no impediment to receiving the fullness of life. But the people doing this to them, there's a moral evil and their souls are at risk and they need Jesus Christ and they are in darkness. They're without hope. And it's not sufficient for us to change the law and get on with our lives. No. These people who are in this culture of darkness and death, they need Jesus Christ. And how are they going to meet Christ? The only place they're going to meet Christ is through you, through me. We cannot be afraid to go where the children are dying, where the mothers are being exploited, where the people are involved deeply. It's midnight at midday in this culture of death, where all these laws have their final implications. But we must go there with the heart, the mindset of Jesus Christ. There's not two sides, pro-life, anti-life. There is only for us one side. We are to be the ambassadors of this unconditional, everlasting love of the risen Jesus Christ to the world that needs us today. And so when we go with love in our hearts. We go with prayer. We go with peace. A mother sometimes will say to me, "Father, I had an abortion. Could God ever love me again?" And I say, "Mom, wrong question. Wrong question. God has a question for you." I said, "God never stopped loving you, mother. He made you because he loved you. He died because he loved you. He never stopped loving you, nor does he stop loving me. God has the question. God's question is this, Mom. Will you love me again?" You don't have to convince God to love you. He never stopped loving you. It is you and I who have to love God. God has no enemies. We are the ones become enemies of God. And it's our job as pro-lifers to desire eternal life for all those caught in this culture of death. It is our job as pro-lifers to allow this risen Christ to take over our very lives, that we bring this unconditional, everlasting love of God to these people caught in this culture of death, to the abortionists, to the people going there, to the people who are so blinded by this darkness that they're actually destroying themselves. And the only thing that will change them is if they meet Jesus Christ. If they meet a person who makes present the love, unconditional love of Jesus Christ. And so when we go in our prayer vigils, and I invite you to come, we'll have one at the end of this month, it's St. Michael's Parish in Brooklyn, and there's actually 35 Australians coming in to participate with us in this vigil. But when we go on the vigil, I invite you to come, but you must come with this proper mentality. You're not coming to condemn. You're not coming in self-righteousness. You're not coming to say, "We're right, you're wrong." No, you're coming to make present to these people the unconditional, everlasting love of Jesus Christ for them. You're coming to make truth known where they're in error. You're coming to bring light where there's darkness. You're coming to bring love where there's hate. You're coming to bring hope where there's despair. You're coming to bring Jesus Christ. The world needs Jesus Christ. Do not be afraid to go to the streets. Do not be afraid to go out to this culture of death. Do not be afraid to go out. The people need you. They need Christ today, yesterday, tomorrow, and forever. And let us bring Christ to people today and tomorrow and forever. God bless you.